Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Conversations with Coaches, the official podcast of stakeholder-centered coaching, where we believe everyone deserves a stakeholder-centered leader. Today is October 17th. It is 8 a.m. here on the beautiful Pacific Northwest. And this is our very first ever live Conversations with Coaches episode. This season, we're shifting gears into more of an Ask the Coach format, building on the success of the Ask the Coach blog led by our guest speaker today and journalist, attorney, master coach, Jathan Janov. In this season, we'll be taking your questions and bringing in top coaches to answer them live. We've already gathered a great number of questions on our topic today, and we will be responding to them here in real time. We are live here with you on LinkedIn. We are live here with you on YouTube. Feel free to interact with us in the chat. As much as I love to look right here at all of you, I will also be monitoring the chat in real time. So as we start, go there and tell us where you are calling in from. Go to your chat and tell us where you're calling in from. We're already seeing Indira in Switzerland, Dina in Greece. We've got Christopher in Munich. Drop us where you are calling from. I always appreciate what a global crowd we have. Today, we're excited to welcome two amazing coaches to the conversation that I can say are both outstanding coaches and personal friends of mine. First of all, we have Nancy Berger. The idea that lives at the core of all of Nancy's work, whether it's speaking, her work in coaching, her writing, or consulting, is that once we identify the thoughts that are holding us back, we can change them and use that to change our behavior. She helps clients cultivate more effective communication skills, both with themselves and with those around. And she uses evidence-based strategies based on human psychology and neuroscience to reduce suffering so that people can feel better in their skin. You may remember her from a LinkedIn Live we did a while back, uncovering fears that hold us back from making the changes that we so desire. I'm very honored to introduce you. Welcome to the show, Nancy.
Thanks, Brandon. I'm so excited to have this discussion.
We're also thrilled to be joined by Jathan, the original Ask the Coach. Actually, the coach in Ask the Coach. Jathan has a unique perspective on the return to in-person work. He believes that in-person remains the most effective form of communication. When you're remote, and the subject is important, he says you should never substitute written communication for real-time conversation. Employers should get inquisitive about when hybrid can work, as well as how AI might help improve that balance. Jathan is also working on a book I'm personally very excited to see released called, I'm also very excited about the title, called Wrong Turn, Converting HR from Compliance Cop to Culture Coach. Converting HR from Compliance Cop to Culture Coach. Jathan, welcome to the show. There we are. For those of you who are unfamiliar with my two guests, Nancy is calling in from the Northeast here in the US, and we have Jathan here with me on the West Coast. So we are at opposite sides of the nation. And so it's even more exciting to me to talk about the idea of hybrid work, remote work, in-person work, while we are sitting here so far apart. So let's get into today's topic. Today, we're talking about the challenges leaders are facing as the hybrid era comes to an end. With so many employees hesitant to return to office, we'll be talking about how leaders can guide their teams through this shift while maintaining productivity, engagement, and well-being, and speaking directly to you, the coaches, who are helping these leaders. So as we broach the topic, go to your chat and share the questions that you have. We'll also be pulling from a list of questions that we have earlier collected from our coaches. So as we get started, Nancy, I want to start with you here. What makes you uniquely qualified to comment on this topic?
I would say that whether or not I'm uniquely qualified, I'm one of many that's qualified if you're talking and working with leaders and teams. So in my work with leaders and teams as a coach, as a consultant, the one thing that's pretty common, a common denominator across all, is that everyone wants to be heard, and that active listening from a leader's perspective is gold. And this issue, this challenge of RTO and whether or not to, you know, sustain hybrid working models, it falls under that category. People want to be heard. Leaders want to actively listen, because with resistance, that is one of the ways to navigate the resistance, is to understand what everyone's problem is with it and then have a transparent conversation and go from there.
Beautiful. Thank you, Nancy. And Jathan, let's come to you. As a journalist for SHRM, and for those of you, again, who are unfamiliar with Jathan's work, take a look at his SHRM bio. We'll drop that link in the chat in a bit. Jathan, as a journalist for SHRM, you have studied this topic extensively. What have you learned from the data, and what can you tell us to sort of set the stage for the conversation?
Well, it's very interesting. I'll share a few things to get started. But I've interviewed a whole bunch of folks, HR people, C-suite people in various industries, geographies, etc. And if I distill, you know, the pros and the cons, you know, here's what it is. Okay. The pros. Okay. Those who think that, you know, the pandemic wasn't all bad because it has created this hybrid opportunity. Okay. Those folks will tell you that it assists recruitment. It makes you a more attractive place to work. It promotes retention. It optimizes work-life balance. For those of you who believe global warming is a reality, it reduces the carbon footprint that we Homo sapiens impose on the planet. And it creates efficiencies, okay, that can boost employee productivity. And last, not necessarily least, it saves on real estate costs, okay? So those are what people tell me are, you know, the proponents. Those are the basic reasons. Maybe there's others we can find out, but that's, if I reduce it to a core, those are the arguments for hybrid work, okay? Now, on the other hand, here's what I've heard from other leaders. Hybrid work reduces or impairs a shared sense of mission, purpose, and goals, okay? Human being synergy is not helped by hybrid work. Productivity goes down, even if those claim otherwise. Home distractions, whatever's going on, you lose on productivity. Accountability suffers. It impairs the sense of teamwork. If we've already made the investment, we're now wasting physical space. And for those of us who do come to work in hybrid environments, it feels demoralizing. It's kind of lonely. You know, what used to be humming with human energy is now almost a ghost town. So I'll stop there for a moment. And then I may circle back to this with some of the specifics from interviews that I did. The interesting thing though, Brandon, I'll just leave with this, is, you know, I wrote on this topic several times. The one article that never got published was the one where people were saying why they don't like hybrid. And I could only find one company that was willing to go into print to say why. Found plenty that we're not pro-hybrid, but none of which wanted to be quoted or seen in a publication. So for whatever that's worth.
Good. Thank you for setting the stage that way, Jathan. I do want to be clear to all of our listeners. The purpose here is not to influence or evaluate or persuade anyone towards leaning towards hybrid work or remote work or back in person, but to focus on the benefits and the costs, both in terms of leadership and employee engagement. And that's why we are here to have this conversations with coaches. So let's jump right in by looking at the aspect of resistance to being back in office. As companies transition back to in-office work, and we're seeing this with large organizations who are experiencing wave after wave of disruptive resistance, we're seeing that the resistance from employees, including top talent leaving for companies offering these hybrid models. And this comes to the first major question, which comes from our friend Harvey. Harvey said, how do you address resistance from both leadership and staff when navigating the return to office dynamics in a rapidly evolving business environment? Nancy, I'm going to turn to you for this first question. What are your thoughts?
It's an easy answer. When there's resistance, understand why. Mission critical. Understand why. And that doesn't mean, you know, box checking what's the problem. It means really digging in. And as Marshall Goldsmith coaches, this is a really, I mean, it's very resonant for us, but it's perfectly aligned. We want it. It doesn't matter what we think. It matters to a leader what your people think, what your stakeholders think, right? So ask your stakeholders what they think. What is the biggest challenge for you about return to office? Let's talk about it. It's the first step. It doesn't mean the answer will come easily, that a company will decide yay or nay on hybrid work. It's the first step in getting transparency on where the challenges arise, because a lot of times in my work with leaders, I have learned that the awareness and the curiosity is what gets them over the hump with understanding the challenges that their employees face, because we tend to believe our own thoughts and get stuck in our own thing, right? So ask the question, where are the challenges? And then start the conversation, because that's the springboard for problem solving and change management.
Jathan, anything you would add to that?
Well, first, I agree 100%, and suggest that maybe you put in the chat the column I wrote on the EAR method of listening. Basically, I would, you know, underscore what Nancy's saying and say, you know, do this. Essentially, you're talking stay interviews. What keeps you coming here? What might make you leave? I think, but listening is critical. I'd add one other thing to it. And that's also, if you want to put that in the chat, where I talk about the why and the what. A mistake that some of these employers make when they say you're coming back now, pandemic post, is they give the what and maybe the how, but not the why. They don't make the case for it. They just, you know, I'm in charge. I'm the boss. I think it's a huge, huge mistake. If you're going to basically take people who have been in some kind of hybrid or remote and have them come to the office now, okay, to Nancy's point, listen, understand, you know, but also don't just say what. You're coming back to work as of, you know, March 1. Get into the why. Make the case for it.
Yeah, can I jump in for a quick, and on that point, from a purely logistic standpoint, from pilot to implementation, let's take a beat. So in other words, to Jathan's point, an employer says, well, you're coming back as of this date, that's it. Maybe we could dip a toe in the water a bit and have a staggered, you know, implementation of this instead of just throwing everybody in the deep end right away and people are scrambling for childcare and, you know, what the piano lesson and how are they going to do, who's taking care of their dog. So pilot to implementation has to be kind of, you know, you have to take a look at that as a leader.
Good. I think that this leads us immediately into the second topic, which is the leadership styles that should be employed as we are making this return to office, or as we're further digging into hybrid work, as I cue this next question, I want to also turn to the audience to say, what is your opinion on this? I don't think anyone has the definitive answer, but feel free to respond to the question, how do you address this resistance while making a return to office run? So next one, Jathan, I'm going to start with you on this question, given the response that you've given. And this is on the topic of leadership styles. As we move out of the hybrid work phase, leadership needs to evolve. How should leaders adapt their styles to meet the changing needs of their teams and ensure communication and collaboration remain effective?
So let me make sure I understand the question. So we're saying it's no longer hybrid, or are we saying leadership when it still is hybrid, at least with some folks?
Thank you. Let's zoom into the large organizations that are moving back to return to office and those leaders who are leading this charge and are going to be overseeing teams and employees who are giving this resistance. How should leaders adapt their styles to meet their changing needs?
Well, I think Nancy hit the number one point. Active listening. Okay. Some understanding, maybe some compassion for the fact that people who are now expected to be in the office every day, that it's a burden, it's a hassle. One of my kids, you know, he works, they have a deal where they're in the office alternate weeks. And, you know, he always dreads the week that he's got to drive through rush hour traffic each day. And so he lives for the weeks where he gets to work remote, and he complains about the weeks where he has to essentially fight traffic. So my biggest thing is these people are going to need to be listened to, and you're going to need some compassion. And also, to Nancy's point, maybe you can work some sort of flexibility into it that at least is a gesture to say, people like my son, that, you know, we need you here, and but we also, maybe we can work on how we get what we need from you as an employee and how you don't feel overburdened with this change.
Yeah, and also, like, validating, you know, the actual gripes, right? Like, there's costs associated with commutation, right? People are starting to understand the costs associated with return to office. And just stuffing it down and not talking about it is not letting people be heard. So talk about the cost. Is there some sort of a subsidy that an employer can provide for commutation, or for, you know, dog care or daycare, or I don't know, there's so many things. Start the conversation, get curious about the employee experience. That will go a long way towards tamping down the resistance and having people feel validated.
Excellent. Well, fortunately for us, we have a very engaged audience today. So let's see what they're having, what their discussions are. And I think some of these comments are coming in on the topic of resistance. So looking here, we've got Bill Summers says, ask those who are closest to the issue what they think. They are the points of contact. Direct reports want to know what you are asking them to do. Water coolers, coffee machines, break rooms. These places offer opportunities to transfer internal knowledge. Dina calling in from Greece, says a client of mine recently expressed a challenge they're facing. Their team in the production department cannot work remotely, and they feel unfairly treated. The client is wondering how to balance the situation. What do you think? Nancy, let's come to you in just a moment on this question after we come through some of these comments, but I think that's the next direction we can go. Mm-hmm. Scott mentioned using surveys. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's all about communication. And you see, this is stakeholder-centeredness. The answer is being stakeholder-centered. Ask people what is important to them and focus on that. Mohar has also said, what is important is the productivity. Absolutely. Being empathetic. We have, yeah, Thank you, Dick Daniels, calling us in from Florida, said, I think business owners are in a tough bind. Yes. Yes. Nailed it on the head. Good. So Nancy, let's come to you with this question. When you have teams who actually can't work remote, they might be in production, in manufacturing, they might be in science labs where they need technical equipment, imaging or other machinery, they feel it's unfair. How can managers navigate this?
So it's remarkable to me that we're at this crossroad when we have so many technological advances at our disposal now, right? I mean, we just did a, you know, Brandon, you just did a whole thing about AI and how, using it. Okay. We want to include everyone. We can use technology to help us do that. So in other words, let's just speak practically. If the person who can't work remotely is feeling that it's unfair, make opportunities available for them. Again, the flexibility that Jathan was talking about, listening, find out what you can do to make a concession for the person that has to be on the line working or in the shop working. And for the remote people that may experience what we would call this fault line, where there's kind of a division between where people are and that, and they're lacking that feeling of cohesion in a team. Make sure that, for instance, somebody who's in a different time zone and they can't get to the virtual meeting has the recording and is on Slack. And there's accommodations for asynchronous people. There's accommodations for people who always have to be in office. You have to find that middle spot, and technology can help you do that. And concessions can help you do that. And it may start with just that curiosity piece. A leader may think that he or she has to boil the ocean to make this work, but sometimes just the small shifts can lead to big changes in perception, right? In the perception held by the employee. So again, talking to both people on both sides, the production person that has to be on site and the remote person who's feeling a little detached, finding where that middle road is, using technology to do it, and using flexibility and some concessions for the person that's always on site. I think that's a good place to start.
Jathan, I'll come to you with what I'm seeing is a thread amongst many of these questions. Ladies and gentlemen, if you see my eyeballs darting around, we have a number of screens monitoring comments and questions and the questions that we've pre-prepared. So if you see my eyes darting around, it's not a sign I'm unengaged. It's actually, I am especially engaged. Jathan, one of the threads that's coming through a number of these questions is the matter of expectation, that many employees seem to have an expectation that they feel they that they deserve hybrid work, and that should be the default. There should be a compelling case to return to office, not the other way around. Where do you think this expectation came from?
Well, it came from, you know, during the height of the COVID pandemic, you know, by necessity, adjustments were made. Now, if you're in manufacturing production, that didn't change. You still had to come to work. But that's where a whole bunch of folks were, you know, allowed to work in part to reduce the likelihood of infection. But now you know, things have changed. And so, Brandon, if I may, one of the reasons I like this topic or was excited about it was I had a chance to share something from the article that was never published by Sherm.
Tell us more.
Okay. Well, this was part two. The first part was people talking about how wonderful it is and, you know, advice on it. And then the second part was organization leaders that said, no, we can't have this anymore. Okay. The pandemic was the pandemic. We need to return to where it was before. Okay. And I think, as I mentioned, I only got one company that was willing to go on record. And so I thought, you know, I'd share a little bit of what Sidney Williams runs a company, a manufacturing company based in Ohio, and has a very firm position, supported by her chief human resource officer, that everybody comes to the office. And I thought maybe I would just, you know, share a little snippets here and then see what the reaction is or what questions. But like, okay, one quote I have for the article is, Sid says, "We are a manufacturing company. Our production workers must be here. And I feel the same about the rest of our employees. It would be a real hit to our culture to allow one group of employees to work from home and not make accommodations for the rest." Be interested to see what our audience or Nancy thinks about that.
You know, I'm reading some of the comments here. They're really interesting. And you're talking about, you know, anthropology and humans' evolution and how we're social animals and all of it. This is all fascinating, which is, it's what makes this conversation so rich. And we are in an age of tech that allows us to connect without being in person. So I think it's dangerous to say, well, we're social animals, we all have to be together. Or productivity and collaboration and everything is going to, you know, go to the dogs. Now, to Jason's point, yes, some people that do hands-on work, product production, things like that, they can't do that remotely. They need the equipment, they need the thing. But the point I'm trying to make is that we have to try to not think of this in a binary way. It's not good or bad, black and white. We're in the gray here, definitely, because we can maintain connection and we can forge team cohesion and all of those things if everyone is not in the office every day. And we have to think about it a little differently. We have to get flexible. We have to get curious. We have to get creative. I mean, I made a joke with Brandon yesterday when we were prepping for this that, you know, in 1989, when somebody told me that you would shop from your computer, I balked at that. Okay. Anything is possible. We've seen it. I mean, there's more examples than we could count about what we're able to do now that we could never do before. What we do with a device in our hand, what we do with software, what we do. So we just need to get creative about this. I agree that people need to connect. We can build connection. The fact of the matter is that the future of work right now is focused way more on a four-day work week and that becoming routine, right? So this discussion is like, okay, we're going to figure this out, but we're just going to have to get a little imaginative about it.
Brandon, can I?
Yep, please, Brandon? Go for it.
Okay, well, I thought Sid, who, by the way, she runs this manufacturing company. She's also a working mom. So, you know, she can relate to some of those, you know, challenges and work-life balance. But she also made a point of saying every day during the pandemic, she came into the office because the production workers had to be there. But she made one observation that I wrote down for the article. And I thought maybe that's a discussion point. Nancy or some of our, you know, the folks that are reacting, she said, our society is experiencing an epidemic of loneliness. Teams, Zoom, Facebook, texting, email, and so on don't make for true human connection. Staying at home means no change of scenery. It's easy to become isolated and feel claustrophobic. There are so many distractions at home, and this is your sacred place. Mixing work and personal here seems to really trod on the work-life balance line. Thoughts, comments, reactions? Nancy or the folks here that want to chat in a response?
Nancy, let's go to you first. And ladies and gentlemen, please share your response in the chat. Nancy?
It may sound like I'm pro hybrid. I really don't have a firm opinion either way. And Jathan, I really appreciate that information, because I understand that and agree with that. And in the current configuration, I think it could lead to more loneliness, right? So I'm just spitballing here. This is not real. I'm just saying, okay, but if the Zoom calls, if one Zoom call every 3 days is required to be held with someone outside, and they have to be walking, or they have to be moving, or they have to be at an ice cream shop, or I'm just spitballing, but you see what I mean? We are applying this to the current configuration. And what we know about humans is that we can come up with other configurations pretty darn quickly. So I'm not saying that the way things are now, it would be sustainable. I think people would feel detached and in their, they're staring at the laundry basket, they're staring at the dishes in the sink, but we can come up with different ideas if we know that this is here to stay and it's the best thing for certain employees. I don't know. Again, I don't have a firm opinion one way or another, but I think these are things we must consider.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's safe to say this is sort of like situational leadership. There's a different situation for each individual based on the tasks that their business are undertaking. And so there's no one right or wrong answer. But as we look at the comments coming in, I want to zoom in here on a comment from Dick Daniels on the generational element. Dick says there is also and for those of you who don't know Dick is a stakeholder-centered master coach calling in from Florida. Definitely connect with him, connect with our speakers while you're here. He says there is also a generational element to this. Younger groups will pack up and leave to go to your competitor if they offer more flexibility of when and where work gets done. So let me pose this question that was given to us by Judy. Judy said, which generations experience the biggest challenges in a return to office policy? Nancy, I'm going to come to you on this. Which generations experience the biggest challenges in a return to office policy? Gen Z, Gen X, millennials, boomers. What's your take, Nancy?
Millennials, number one, and Gen Z, number two. And understand, so this is a thing. Some of these folks started working during the global pandemic. It's what they know. So we can't put the genie back in the bottle, right? The pandemic has resolved more or less, okay. But we can't put the genie back. We know what we know. We can't unknow it. We can't unexperience what it felt like to work from home. As awful as the pandemic was, people were like, okay, now, I don't know, this isn't so bad. I don't have to. And they don't want to go back to the old way. It's like human nature. I don't know why this is so shocking that there's, resistance to this. But millennials and Gen Zers, it's like what they know. And there's a need for talent. And talent acquisition, talent retention are real problems. And this data point is absolutely correct that Dick is right. They're just not going to take the job. They're going to find somebody who's going to let them work hybrid, 4 day work week. I want to go surfing. That's what it's going to be.
Jathan, what's your take on this?
Well, I agree 100% with what Nancy said. And I add one other thing, because the millennials and the Zs are dealing with younger children. Okay. An old fogey like me, my kids are long gone. If I had to, I don't like the traffic, but I could, I can pull it off, but it's a big deal. Another one of my kids, he's got two little ones, and he founded a law firm that's in California, Pennsylvania, and New York. Okay. And I think he'd tell you if they, that would be impossible for him to run this national firm if he had to every day go to some office, whichever it is. I mean, they have offices. So you would never, ever get him to go to a place where you got to be physically in the same space every day, 5 days a week. So, or even probably even 4 days a week, Nancy.
Yeah.
That's my take. It's It's a big challenge. It's a big challenge.
And like, if for those of listeners who have adult children, I mean, we joked about it, but I have had conversations with my adult children about, you know, what I used to do when I worked in New York City, standing on the train platform at 5:15 in the morning every day. They're like, every day?
Yeah, like, what a dinosaur you are.
Exactly. So, it's a new world.
Well, Allison has offered us here, she said, for knowledge workers, companies need to adapt to hybrid if they want to retain and recruit millennials and Gen Zs. And I think these Gen Zs are also worth sort of expanding on. Nancy, I'll come to you to sort of continue the thought. This question came to us from Constantina. Constantina wrote, Gen Z is emerging as a significant part of the workforce in the coming years, and they are strongly embracing a nomadic culture. This could make a return to office more challenging. How can next generation leaders effectively manage this shift with Gen Z workforce?
Yeah, I don't mean to be repetitive, but I don't think it's a really... I don't think it's much different than for other talent acquisition. I think you have to weigh what this generation is going to bring to you, how much you need that, and balance that with what they're asking for. It's a unique generation, and they're very experientially oriented, and they kind of draw some lines in the sand pretty comfortably. You know, it is a testament to the strength of their convictions, taking up space, speaking truth. I think these are all good things. We're not getting into, I mean, somebody asked a question about wellness and all of that, and that's kind of an offshoot of this, but I think this is something to foster and nurture and figure out a way, if you need this talent pool, how you're going to meet them where they are. And that's what leaders ought to be doing anyway. Right? Meeting people where they are, understanding the needs of the stakeholders, understanding the perceptions held by them. This is what we do as Marshall Goldsmith coaches. But in this case, it's not a unique answer. It's just that they may have unique needs and wants, and you got to try to figure out what those are and meet them halfway.
Beautiful. Thank you, Nancy. Jathan, I want to pose sort of an open question to you. And turn to some comments here as you prepare to respond, which is, if you have a leader who's looking at these challenges as a reality of their upcoming day-to-day life, managing this resistance, strategically planning around these, and they gave you a call as a coach and said, hey, I need to be more stakeholder-centered in this, how would you go about structuring a coaching engagement to help this leader? So think on that for a moment. I want to point out Scott's comment here, which may contribute, it may exacerbate, or it may benefit things, which is that this Gen Z also grew up on technology. They were digitally connected in a way that many of these other generations weren't. And I'd be curious, Scott, for you to respond also to your own comment. Do you think that this will make things easier for leaders? Do you think that this will make it easier for Gen Z, or is it going to complicate things in general? So, Jathan, if a leader who was looking at these challenges as part of their day-to-day hired you as a coach, how would you structure the engagement to ensure optimal outcomes?
Could I respond to Scott's comment first?
Please do.
Because it touches on something. So I'll start. I have two responses, Scott. First comes from Sid Williams, who I referred to, and she talked about the productivity hit with remote work. Okay. I don't like how people get locked into their computers instead of 50 emails. How about 5 minutes of face-to-face time? Okay, and that's what she said. And then I'm gonna add one other thing to what Sid said. And we'll, you know, see what your reaction is or others. One of, when I coach leaders, organization leaders, every engagement involves disabusing them of the notion that a potentially sensitive or substantive message should be conveyed first in writing. In fact, Brandon, if you can access the one I say, you know, the column I wrote on the one do and the one don't in writing. And that's another thing I see. I'm doing conflict resolution work right now based on, you know, email communications, text communications that threaten to destroy relationships. And in none of those cases is that inevitable. Nicholas Epley at the University of Chicago Booth School has done some amazing research. Essentially, what he's found is when you send a written message on something substantive, you're going to assume that you've been totally clear. You know, there's no ambiguity. The recipient is going to assume that they completely understand your message. Reality, it's a coin toss. Okay? It's a coin toss. The other thing about Epley's research that I think is very important here is when they used a test on written communication versus verbal communication, scripting, it was in an employment application process. Human beings innately react more negatively to the written word they read than to the spoken word that they hear, even though the words are identical. And I think those points, Sid's point about you get stuck on email forever and you're going to tend to have miscommunications, misunderstandings, erroneous assumptions. And so that's, I think, one of the biggest challenges, especially in hybrid environments. I'll stop there.
Well, thank you. And Jathan, coming back to the question on how coaching can actually substantive materially benefit leaders who are looking at these challenges, how would you go about sort of strategizing a coaching engagement for a leader who's looking at these things?
Well, first would be the, you know, what I call the 3-3-1. Okay, if I'm coaching a leader who's trying to make hybrid work, okay, I'm gonna do a very thorough 360. Okay, that covers some of the points that Nancy mentioned. And we're gonna develop, as we do in Stakeholder Center Coaching, a goal and then an action plan. And the goal is gonna have something about creating a sense of team, notwithstanding the hybrid, you know, we'll call it challenge. And by the way, maybe you already did it, but I think I sent you the article, one of the articles on the link where the chief human resource officer of Virginia Tech shared in detail what he's done. I think that's probably one of the most effective strategies. So I recommend you put that in the chat line. But I think that's how we get going. Get a real thorough sense from 360s, confidential interviews, and then have a goal that explicitly addresses the challenge of leading a company where there's hybrid work.
Comments. There's one I'm going to bring up here from Harvey. And I have to, let's see. Okay, so it's a bit long. I'll try to read what it says. Nancy, Jathan, I'd be curious your your perspective. And this, by the way, Harvey, is exactly what these sessions are supposed to be about. The fact that we're doing them live is specifically for questions like this. For those of you who are just listening and are not seeing, Harvey's given a very well thought out contention about the effectiveness of Zoom meetings and has brought up several reasons why they may be ineffective. He cites limited relationship building, reduced collaboration, technical issues interrupting and interfering with communication, lower engagement, and team dynamics where leaders may struggle to manage team energy in virtual environments. So I'd like to do two things. In a moment, Nancy, I'll turn to you. But to the audience, I want to come to you first. Those of you who are, what I'd like to do is hear from you how you would self-rate your working situation. So go to your chat box and specify whether you are remote or whether you are in person or whether you are hybrid. And let's use a 1 to 5 scale of 5, I absolutely love this model. 1, I deplore it and wish it would change. But tell us, what are your personal thoughts on your unique situation for working? Now, coming back to Harvey's comment, Jathan, Nancy, any immediate response to this?
I have an immediate response in that, Harvey, I 100% agree with you. I 3,000% agree with you. That is, those things are all challenges. Now, I want to just emphasize, we're talking about hybrid, not fully remote. So what does that mean? That those pockets of time when people are in office need to be approached purposefully, right? With intentionality. What are we doing when everyone is in the office? What are we doing to reinforce that in-person experience, build cohesion in this team, connectivity, not, okay, let's all play volleyball and that's it. Volleyball's great. But I mean, what are we doing to curate this experience? So make it purposeful when people are together. The second thing I want to say is, I don't want to get off on a tangent on this, but I will use the example of, there is no one size fits all for education of our children, nor is there a one size fits all in the realm of return to work and hybrid work and how to manage it. There is neurodivergence everywhere, and not everyone picks up nonverbal cues, and not everyone is really graded in person. And some people feel more comfortable when they're not face to face. So I just think there's so many factors to consider that, let's, one, make the in-person time well-managed and purposeful. And number two, let's not lose sight of the fact that there are many different kinds of people and there's not a one-size-fits-all approach. But your points are well taken. All of those things happen. We all experience it. Yes.
Jathan?
Well, one of the things I think, Harry, I mean, first, I agree 100% everything he said. A tip. When you do have to do it remotely or on Zoom, that I use in my coaching, is if somebody says something that pisses you off, okay, make a decision before you open your mouth. Is this something I need to respond to here, or is this something maybe I can respond to individually, real time, with the person who ever said what it was that pissed me off? So the first is a filter, okay? You know, the limbic system. I mean, when we hear things that we don't like, we go back to, you know, caveman days, you know, fight, flight, freeze. And I say, how about filter instead of fight, flight, freeze? And so let's just say, Harvey, I'll pick it on you. Okay. We have this big meeting and Harvey says something that, oh man, Jathan's, man, I don't know what the heck that dude is smoking. Okay. Now I could address that in the big group, or afterwards I could reach out and say, hey, Harvey, let's talk, not send a message that says you really upset me in this, that, and the other. I do a lot of conflict resolution that never would have been needed if people communicated real time, preferably in person, but if not, real time. All right, I'm off my soapbox.
You know, I don't think I've ever been disappointed when you climbed up there, Jathan. In fact, that's exactly what this is supposed to be about, is giving you a soapbox to respond to these very soapboxy topics. Harvey, like my esteemed guest, I would, on one hand, agree with everything you've said. On the other hand, I do want to offer a fresh perspective. And as coaches, I think we appreciate creative abrasion when we're looking at ambiguous topics. And I'll offer some of that. You know, you've cited limited relationship building, reduced collaboration, lower engagement. While all of that is true, I have found personally for my own work, so this is not a blanket comment, that the opposite of all these have happened. The vast majority of my role is sitting in or leading meetings, compared to the time that I need to commute an hour to and from work. If I have that same amount of work time, not only am I more productive, but I can be in more meetings. I can engage my people more quickly and rapidly by not needing to walk across campus. I click a couple buttons and I have them right there in front of me. So where my direct reports might only get face-to-face one-on-one time once a week or once every few weeks, I can almost do it every few days for a very brief time between our one-on-ones. This actually drives engagement. We're able to collaborate with more people more quickly, and we're able to squeeze in more collaborative time. The relationship building impacts alone from that, from being able to meet on Zoom versus in person, have been outstanding. And when I've met with people in person, I wouldn't say from my personal situation that there is a marginal gain in the face-to-face. Now, boy, this is such a big topic. We could easily spend 5 or 6 hours talking about it, but we don't have 5 or 6 hours.
No, but Jathan's chopping at the bit. He has to.
Oh, Jathan, yeah. Go for it, Jathan. Thank you.
Key point, Brandon, is how you conduct meetings. You are other-centered, meaning you go to the chat, you ask others, you affirmatively engage people. Now, I've worked with leaders that are not other-centered. In fact, one of the diseases of corporate leadership is it tends to make you self-focused, not other-focused. And if you're using remote, in addition to, I mean, that, you know, self-focused is a recipe for disengagement. So I just want to point out that, you know, you make it work because you're other-centered, not self-focused.
Coming from a stakeholder-centered master coach, Jathan, that is high praise. I really appreciate it.
Well,
thank you for that.
Thing, right? That's the thing, stakeholder-centered coaching. That's kind of the thing. Yeah.
Well, I would invite our audience members that as we head to close, give us a 1 or 2 sentence summary of your view on the topic. Has it changed? Has it been enriched? Has it been challenged? Leave us with your thoughts. Nancy, I'll begin with you. If you could leave the coaches in the room today with one piece of advice on this topic, what would that be?
It would be to, you know, as coaches, we aren't prescriptive, right? We're trying to offer guidance, but help leaders rise to their potential, right? Get curious on how you can increase your leader's self-awareness about how they're thinking about hybrid work and what thoughts they're believing about it, and maybe get out of that comfort level and focus more on the perceptions held by the stakeholders, which is the whole methodology of Marshall Goldsmith's stakeholder-centered coaching. But get curious with your leaders and help them raise their own awareness around the thoughts they're having about it and what they can learn by leaning in, actively listening and digging in on some creativity and collaboration to make a path forward that would work and meet their people where they are.
Beautiful. And Nancy, how can our audience get in touch with you, follow your story, continue the dialogue?
Very easy. NancyRBerger.com, my website. You can find me there. Or if you just want to email me directly, Nancy@NancyRBerger.com. I'm all over social and I'm on LinkedIn and I'm responsive. So shout, give me a shout. Love to chat.
Thank you, Nancy. And those links are there in the chat as well. Thank you, Maria, for dropping them in. Jathan, coming to you, if you could leave our coaches with one piece of advice on this topic, what would that be?
If something in these remote communications upset you, before you react, fight, flight, freeze, okay, ask yourself if your feeling can be expressed afterwards, one-on-one, real time, not conveyed through email, not through text, not through group chat, but reach out to that human being that pushed your button, have a real-time conversation, because the odds are strong that you'll resolve it in a constructive way. If you don't, then the odds are that that's going to be a failed relationship and everybody loses.
Well, thank you, Jathan, for that. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in thanking our guests, Nancy Berger and Jathan Janov, for sharing their wisdom and expertise with us today. Before we close down, I have an ask for those of you in the audience. I have a very important ask. Today, we were trialing a format that may be adopted for the entirety of season 4 of Conversations with Coaches. And what we need to know is from you, what did you think? Did you like the format? Do you wish that we had more prepared questions and structure? Do you wish that we do more responding to live questions? For those of you who didn't know, we had some prepared questions and we also took some live ones. What did you like more? What could we do more of, less of? What could we start doing, stop doing? And did you like the format overall? I'm dropping a Jot Form. Thank you. Maria has dropped a Jot Form link here. I will bump it so it is at the top and easy to access. Please go there and share your response. You can also share a response right here. Tell us, did you like it? What do you want to see more of, less of for season 4? Thank you, Jathan, and thank you, Nancy, for joining us. Audience, thank you for being here as well. I would encourage you on your way out to connect with Nancy and connect with Jathan here on LinkedIn. And if you would like to know more about the Stakeholder-Centered Coaching Training Program, you can visit link.mgscc.net/learn-more. And that is right here on screen, link.mgscc.net/learn-more. We'll keep the room open here for another moment as you share your responses to today's format and as you leave your appreciation and gratitude also for Nancy and Jathan for sharing their time. Last thing is I do want to thank our producers and everyone in the back who are making all of this happen, namely Diana Padrone and Maria Heredia. Excellent work. Thank you to both of you. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Stakeholder-Centered Coaching, where we believe everyone deserves a stakeholder-centered leader. Please join us next time for another episode of Conversations with Coaches. We'll see you.